The World Series resumes tonight in San Francisco, and we have an interview with the manager of the team that's ahead 2-0. Some of you hear Fresh Air tape delayed, so the series might be over by the time you hear this. Tony La Russa is the manager of the Oakland A's. He's been voted Manager of the Year twice by the Baseball Writers Association of America. During his playing career, La Russa was a utility infielder. He became the manager of the Chicago White Sox in 1979, was dismissed in July of 1986, and signed with the A's just a few days later. This is an excerpt of an interview I recorded with La Russa last May when Fresh Air visited San Francisco. The A's were tied for first place then, but I asked La Russa what he says to the team just after they lose a game.
Well, it's a tricky thing. Talking to your players is tricky in the sense that if you have a formal meeting after every ball game that you lose, then you're going to wear out the effect of you meeting with the team.
Uh-huh.
Because you play for 6 months, 162 games, and if you have a great year and you win 100 games, you're going to lose 62. So I think you have to be very careful when how many times you actually stand before the team and say, let's get together because I have something to say. These guys are men, not machines. You look for effort first, and then you recognize that sometimes the execution's not going to be there because you just can't be perfect.
What do you tell a player who could have played harder?
Well, that's the one thing that you cannot tolerate. So if you see somebody who shorts you the effort, not only is that person, your relationship with that person affected, but all the other teammates, they're watching. So if somebody gets by with not running a ball out or not getting the job done because they just physically didn't give you the effort, if you turn the other, you know, turn your cheek or ignore it, it's going to have an effect on the player and the whole team. So in effort, now, when it comes to effort, I usually treat that right now. I'll do it right during the game. I'll mention it. If for some reason something is distracting immediately after the game, usually in the privacy of my office, but if I think it's important enough, I think you have to confront a player right in the clubhouse.
In front of other players?
In front of other players. But that's a drastic one. I think if you nail a guy coming off the field in front of everybody in the dugout, it's got to be something severe.
Let me ask you about a few things very briefly. When you're in some kind of dispute or trying to discipline a player who's very high paid and getting paid a lot more money than you are, does it make it hard for you to have the kind of power and authority that you want in that situation?
Good question, and I think one that's very much misunderstood. The answer is absolutely not.
Uh-huh.
Number one, I never talk to the player about money. Therefore, it's not an issue. I don't care if the guy's making $1 million, $2 million, or he's a rookie making 60. Never talk to him. The issue or whatever the problem is has to do with something on the field. So the relative salary between us has nothing to do with it. Second, I think I've learned, you are the manager. You are a man in authority. And if you are willing to take the authority and exert it, you will be paid the proper due. So, no, I don't think the salary difference has anything to do with it.
There's an old saying in baseball about how, you know what I'm going to say here, that the best managers are mediocre players usually make really good managers. And you were a mediocre player when you were.
That's the kindest thing to say. I was worse than mediocre.
Well, I think your batting average was 200 for.
You just gave me 2 points about 198.
198, okay. so is there truth in that, do you think?
I think there's some truth in it, and I'm not making any claim about what I am as a manager, but I think there's no doubt in my mind that if you're a scuffling-type player that had to survive, in your scuffles, you would have had to learn a lot of the pieces of the game and play them to your max amount. Sometimes if you're a better player, you know, if you're an outstanding hitter or something, or an outstanding pitcher, then you can just do your strength so well that pieces of it are not that necessary unless you personally make it a point to be a complete player. That, to me, is the formula. So if you see a player who does it all and really loves the game, well, just being a star doesn't mean he's not going to be a good manager. If you're not a good player, to survive, you're forced to learn a lot about the game. And then when you get into it, I think, number one, you have those lessons. But number two, I think you do have, and here's probably the key call, Terry, I think you have a certain appreciation of the different ranks of players. You know, I really believe that I understand what a guy who's struggling as a young player is trying to do, a bench player, a veteran player just coming off, you know, the peak of his years. So I'm not sure sometimes the star gets that appreciation unless he really is people interested.
Mm-hmm. Is it true that you were signed the night that you graduated from high school?
Must have been some night. Yes, it was. It was, you know, an exciting time for a young player back then because there was no draft. So it was back when anybody who was interested could court you. And at those days, there was 24 major league teams, and I had 20 contract offers of the 20. It was only four teams that did not express an interest. So it was, you know, you had people coming in, they'd take you to dinner. They would, you know, Charlie Finley personally flew down to Chicago to meet our family. So it was a very exciting, and it was, you know, you thought, wow, if 20 clubs are interested, I must have some ability. And the fact was, graduation night, when we came back to my parents' home, there were three scouts' cars parked outside waiting to talk to me about which club to go with.
Was it disappointing for you to have been courted the way you were and to be given so much money to sign with the A's and then to not fulfill that promise? Did you feel like a failure when you were starting in baseball?
My answer is no. I'll tell you why. It ended up being adversity that you grow with. You know, I don't talk about it much, but if push came to shove, if I had stayed healthy, I think I would have been a pretty good player. Mm-hmm. You know, I hurt my arm, I hurt my back, hurt, you know, it goes on and on and on. So what I learned about myself was that I wasn't a quitter, that I could play with pain, and that it meant enough to me to start something and finish something. So later on, as I started getting healthier, I ended up having some pretty decent years, especially in AAA, but I was then, I wouldn't say a fraction of what, but I couldn't throw very well anymore. You know, my mobility was cut back, but I still played for 15 years. So when I quit, I knew that although my talents had been limited, I knew that I had some internal strength that, you know, that I could deal with pain, and I wasn't a quitter.
We talk about pain and injuries. I think it was in 1963, the year that you were first signed. You injured your shoulder or a tendon while playing, and you didn't tell anybody. So you went through spring training without reporting the injury. And did you do permanent? Well, why didn't you tell anybody, first of all?
Well, I had a chance to make the major league team. It was, you know, one of those bonus baby provisions where if they want to keep you, they can choose to keep you on the big league team. And I knew I was one of the guys being considered, so I felt like I could fake it. And you know, the more that I threw with it, finally it ended up tearing. I had a tendon problem in my throwing shoulder, right arm, ended up tearing. But that was, you know, I was just trying to survive at that point, and you know, just not smart enough to realize, you know, if I hurt my throwing arm as an infielder, it's not going to be very good for my career down the road. But, you know, I never said I was smart.
You were one of only five managers in the history of baseball who also have had law degrees. When did you get yours?
Well, at the end of this mediocre playing career, you know, it was when it became obvious to me that I wasn't going to be a good major leaguer and make enough money to sustain my family, I got to do something else. And you know, I loved to read. I liked solving problems, and I had friends who were lawyers. So I started going to law school during the off season, surely figuring that I was going to finish playing ball any one of these years, finish my law degree, become a lawyer. So I started in 73 and went every winter. It took me five winters. But what happened was, about the end of the 76 season, the managing bug kind of bit me. So I tried to manage, and everything, I'm telling you, if I talk to you about my first few years managing, everything fell into place. I got to the big leagues very quickly, and therefore law became something that got shoved aside. But at one point, I was going to be a lawyer as soon as my playing career was over. But the managing thing, I just caught every break in the world.
Anything about law come in handy for you as a manager?
I think so. I think the attention to detail and the preparation that they teach you in school will give you an edge in a case. I'm convinced, I've become convinced in my own mind, that if I come into a series against a team, if I'm prepared in my own case down to the last detail, if the team is prepared, we'll have our best chance to win. So I think that's one carryover.
Let's talk about arguing with umpires. When you do argue with an umpire, does your legal background ever come in handy?
Nah. Nothing comes in handy when you work with umpires.
Right.
There's nothing going to help. Early on, they would kid me about it a little bit. Because, you know, I had played for a long time in my leagues, so a lot of these men I knew. It was more a matter of kidding. But I got to say, basically, you go out there, if you have a legitimate argument, you say it quickly and you get out, because you're not going to change anybody's mind.
Let me ask you to remember one of your baseball memories from childhood, one of the things that really hooked you on the game?
Well, you know, most of them, I have three or four that come to mind real quickly. One, they used to have come to call the Intersocial League, which is a semi-pro league, played on Thursday night and Sunday afternoon. And a real plum was being the scoreboard keeper. So, you know, they had a manual scoreboard in center field, and you sat in a wheelbarrow between the balls and the strikes. And because it was obvious that I loved the game when I was very young, they gave me that job. And you used to get, like, I believe it was $3 on Thursday night and $5 for the Sunday doubleheader. So one of my best memories was just sitting there in center field, you know, being the, you know, ball strike, get up and put the outs and put the score up and get to watch this game on Thursday night and the doubleheader on Sunday. And then if it was a weekday, another memory that I have was, you know, we lived upstairs above a service station. And there was an alley, and my mom, because my dad worked all the time, my mom would play catch with me in the alley. That's when I was real young. And you remember those things, and, you know, and that's some of my strongest memories.
Tony La Russa, I want to thank you very much for talking with us about baseball in your life. Thank you.
Okay, Terry, thank you for having me.